Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Wendy, before we start, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's listened to the 15-minute podcast thus far. Been really overwhelmed with the amount of people that have listened, and more importantly, the amount of people that have reached out and said, "You guys are doing a good job." It's really lovely, isn't it?
It's really lovely. And when people say it's relatable, that definitely makes me feel a bit less weird, which is nice.
You don't know how... what's the word? You don't know how less weird you are until you actually start talking openly about stuff.
Yeah.
I think you're the only one who has consistently creeped through his little sister's bedroom night by night. I think you're the only one who's done that. If you want to know what that means, then listen to the Football Manager podcast. What I want you to do, we've got a little call to action for people that are listening. Two things, actually. One, please share the podcast. Share it with people you know. Me and Winnie have an audience already with our respective football podcasts, but we're trying to reach new people as well. So share it with people you know. And also, if you can, leave a review on iTunes. And what we want you to do when you leave a review is just put a single subject. Whatever you might want us to talk about, put it in the review along with the lovely words you're about to say. And we'll consider talking about them.
Consider. Wendy, you're not committing to it.
Well, it just some things like some of the suggestions you've made, I'm like, I don't know if I can be interesting about that at all. So it's not for us looking at the subjects and going, "Oh, that's a rubbish suggestion." It's just that in order for this to work, we have to be able to talk comfortably about the subject matters as well. We've got a thank you as well, haven't we?
Well, I want to give a shout out to Mike Smith, who designed our artwork. He's done an outstanding job with our artwork. I love it. It's awesome. He's a brilliant designer. He was so nice to work with as well. Just a really sort of down-to-earth guy who took on board all of our ideas and then made them a lot better.
Yep.
His website is mikesmithdesign.co.uk. If you have a business or a need to have some design work done, consider Mike and tell him you came from 15 minutes.
Not just that, not business. It could be wedding invite, anything. He's so good. I've got him to do a few things for me as well, and he is just fantastic. I just gave him a brief, left it a week later, wherever it was that we agreed to speak again. He came back and delivered above and beyond what I thought he would do. So yeah, fantastic work. And yeah, so if you need a designer, contact Mike. All right, should we get on with the show?
Let's get on with it. Okay. 15 minutes on the timer, and the subject is pets.
Pets. Do you know, the first thing that pops into my mind, Wendy, is my chickens. And as I grew up in very urban London, I never thought that owning chickens would be a sensible thing to do, or a thing that I could ever actually do. And I always had this dream of living in the country and living in, you know, quite a rural setting. And chickens seem to come with that rural setting. And I've gone from having four chickens in the garden. Out there now, it's unruly. It's unruly. There's about 18. There may be 20 chickens out there. They keep wow. having chicks. And, you know, it's... they're not. The thing is, the more you get windy, the less like pets they are. And it, and I feel like they're actually livestock now.
That's You're a farmer.
Like. I'm a smallholder. For real. I'm considering getting goats.
Wow,
I need more space. I need
goats
more...
are next level, though, aren't they?
Yes.
Like, that feels a lot. That feels like a lot more work.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But I'm willing to put the work in.
So how many eggs do your chickens produce?
Depends. Right. First thing I should say is they're bantams, right? So they're like half the size of a normal chicken. And so the eggs are half the size of normal eggs. So you need double the eggs, essentially, for what you'd normally want. But yeah, they lay in. When it depends, they go broody, right? So they stop laying. If they're sitting on eggs, they stop laying. And during winter months, they lay less. But in spring, with the 20 chickens out there, I'm not sure how many are cockerels, because that's another issue. You can't have too many cockerels together. They fight each other. I would say you might get 10 to 12 eggs a day during laying season, which you can't eat, obviously, so you just give them away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And by the way, they are small. But the problem with, I think the word's husbandry, that might be wrong, right? But the problem with raising animals like these is that they get sick. Birds get sick. They're quite sickly things to keep. And
particularly if they're inbred like yours.
Well, no, they're not inbred, actually, because we removed the bloodline. So now that we've had loads, we have to get a new cockerel and move him on to somewhere else.
I see.
And I don't mean to heaven. I mean, we'll find him a new home. But I did have to kill one. I wouldn't say murder. What would you say? What would be the kind thing? I had to murder one of my chickens.
Euthanize?
Yeah. Can you euthanize a chicken with a brick?
Oh, my God. Is that what you did?
That's what I had to do.
Oh, mate. I couldn't do that.
I didn't want to do it. The problem was it was really, really ill. It went downhill really quickly. And my dog kept... Whenever a chicken's unwell, my dog kept... would pick them up and carry them around in their mouth. Not chew them. We'd just carry them around. Frank would.
He's trying to take them to hospital.
He's trying to do something. He sort of whimpers and carries them around. So, which is quite nice, because you expect him just to tear them apart and eat them, but that's not what he does. Anyway... it was so ill, it was essentially making weird noises and its legs were just moving independently of itself.
Oh, God.
And it was on its side. So you know that there's no saving this thing. Its eyes were, it was blind. I don't know what happened to it, but it went downhill really quickly. I didn't even notice until it got to this point. And then...
You bricked it.
I had to. And I don't want anyone to... I'm a vegetarian, right? I'd never be cruel to an animal. I would never, ever, ever willingly hurt an animal.
It was just an act of kindness.
It felt like the quickest way to do it was to smash its head in with a brick. Yes. What other... Like, I didn't know the technique of twisting its neck and, like, breaking its neck.
Well, there's a risk with that as well, isn't there? That if you get it wrong, the head comes off.
The head comes off, or it's still alive. I break its neck and it's still alive.
Oh, like, God.
So I thought the brick was the quickest way. And to be fair, I did hit it really hard, and it did die instantly. So I think I did a good job.
You did good. You did good.
Wendy, I've been talking for 7 minutes. Wendy, go on. Tell me about your pets.
I've had loads of pets. So I think my parents thought that giving us a pet would give us a sense of responsibility, which probably worked to some degree. But so we had two dogs when I was tiny, Barkley and Daisy. Barkley was a very good boy. I think I've mentioned Barkley before on here. Yeah. Daisy was a bit of a bad girl. But she was a fun dog to have. She was half Dachshund and half Jack Russell. She had like a long, thin, short-haired, brown body, so she looked like a poo with ears, with these really big, sort of squirrely ears, like unusually, abnormally big ears. She was very funny to look at. She was very feisty. She would protect Barkley. She was great. I have a really bad memory actually of a family holiday we went on. We were on a beach going for a lovely walk. And these three Staffordshire Bull Terriers charged over off the lead and just started attacking Daisy. Barkley ran off because he was very timid. And my dad had Daisy on the lead. And we were all, I think me and my sister must have been 7 or 8, maybe a smidgen older. And we were absolutely terrified. These dogs were going ballistic. And my dad was having to sort of pick Daisy up, like swing her around on the lead to keep her away from them. That was the only thing he could do. So he was like basically strangling her. But they kept going for her. The owner was like running over. He was a young lad that had stupidly let his dogs off the lead without thinking that it could cause a problem.
Yeah.
He was very apologetic and embarrassed, but we were completely traumatised by it. It was a horrible incident. And it just made me realise how much I loved her. And it felt like, you know, seeing a member of your family in distress, basically, and you just wanted to help. Like, me and my sister were trying to kick these dogs away. We were children. We were just trying to protect our lovely dog. But we didn't just have dogs. We had a rabbit called Smokey. We had guinea pigs. We had hamsters when we got a bit older. We had a hamster each in our bedrooms. And then as our dogs passed on, we got new dogs. So yeah, always growing up in a house of dogs, love them to bits.
I got bit by a dog within, I would say about 4 months ago.
Wow. By your dog, I assume.
No. So my dog is a staff. And what you said just there reminded me, while Staffordshire Bull Terriers are good dogs, they're very good dogs, especially around children. They're known as nanny dogs. So they're very tolerant. The vast majority of them, you always get some dogs that are bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, can't be trained and whatnot. But the vast majority of dogs, of staffs are really, really, they're very patient with kids and they're just really good pets. I've had 3 staffs in my life. And Frank, my boy at the moment, I absolutely love him to bits, but I don't let him off the lead. If I see another dog, I don't let him off the lead because I know he has it in him to fight with the dogs and it's not his driving focus, but if a dog starts barking at him, he barks and it escalates really quickly. So I always make sure he's on lead unless I can see for miles and there's no one around and then I let him off, or in the woods where it's, you know, you can't really see very far and you can listen. It's basically much safer in the woods. Anyway, I'm walking around this corner and there's one dog that he hates. It's like his nemesis and it's a miniature schnauzer. It hates Frank. Frank hates it. They hate each other. As soon as they see each other, they go for each other every time. So I always have him on the lead just in case this dog's around. And so does the woman, to be fair to her. But just on this instance, we were coming around the bend where it was blind. They couldn't see us. I couldn't see them. And she had it off the lead, and I had Frank on the lead, right?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It ran up, and I was like, well, all I can do here is, I have Frank on a harness, so it makes him easier to control, is lift him up by the harness and get him out of the way, because if he grabs this dog, it's over. You know, he would probably end up killing the dog or injuring it severely. They might press charges. I'd probably lose him. So I wanted him up and out of the way. So I've got him up, and the worm, and the miniature schnauzer's jumping up and biting at Frank's legs. And just so happened that I might be, at the moment, Wendy, carrying a little bit of extra timber, all right? All right? And as I was bent over, you know, trying to lift Frank up, it just might have happened that the dog, when trying to bite Frank's feet, actually bit me on my gut.
On your overhang.
Yeah, on my overhang. And he bit through the T-shirt.
Jesus.
So much so that it drew blood. It was mad.
And was she apologetic?
Yeah, she kicked the dog. It flew through the air. It was like, which was, I mean, she fucking wellied it, to be fair.
She was worried about you, obviously.
I think, yeah, she just realised that she knows what a dog's like because she's been trying to train it, but it's really hard.
It's difficult, isn't it? You need to socialise them and slowly and surely and get them used to other dogs, but that takes time. It takes time and a lot of effort.
Energy. It's energy sapping.
Yeah. And the thing is, like you say, if you keep them on leads and let them test the waters a little bit, let them get close to a dog, and if you can see it's going to kick off, then you quickly drag them away and move on. That seems fair enough to me.
Wendy, what's the saddest you've ever been of one of your pets you've had to put down?
Oh, God, that's a hard one. I think Millie, our third dog, she was a black cocker spaniel. We inherited her from my mum's best friend died of cancer, and Millie was a puppy at the time. They just got her not long before my mum's friend died, and we took Millie on. And she was just the sweetest natured dog. She was really soppy. I was like a early teenager at the time, so it was great fun for me to have a young puppy in the family. We had Daisy still at that point, but Daisy was really old and wasn't boisterous or playful at that point. Millie was just like a bundle of energy. She was brilliant. She was a very licky dog. She would like lick your face and your ear as much as she could, which I wouldn't be impressed with now, but at the time it didn't bother me. But she was just so docile, so sweet, really sweet natured. Actually, there was another traumatic event with Millie. I was showering one day, getting ready for school, and suddenly my mum ran into the bathroom and said, "Millie's been hit by a car." And my dad had been walking the dogs on the moor across the road from us, which he did every day, same time every day. And he'd let them briefly off the lead, and Millie, for some unknown reason, just started absolutely bombing it towards the road. And my dad didn't know what to do in that moment. He was like calling her name, and she wasn't turning around. She wasn't stopping. She must have heard or seen something that just caught her attention. And he said it was just like it happened in slow motion. He saw her run towards the road, then he heard a massive bang, and he ran over to her and scooped her up, and she had blood coming out of her nose.
Oh, no.
It was so traumatic for my dad in particular, but for the whole family. It was horrible. But she survived. She survived it.
Did you blame your dad?
No, not at all, because he'd done what he did every day. It was just one of those unfortunate things. He was absolutely devastated. Yeah. Like, he felt so guilty.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He obviously ran home with her, and Daisy just kind of trotted on behind, bless her. And like, we got her in a blanket. She went straight to the vets, and they did an amazing job and managed to save her.
What did they say? What happened? Did she break her leg or something like that?
No breaks, bizarrely. It was just internal bleeding and major bruising. So she was in a collar for a while and made a full recovery. But I think that, in a way, made it more sad when she did eventually die, because she had such that huge amount of trauma where we'd always like bonded even closer with her. We just loved her to bits. She was brilliant. And she was in a bad way by the end, and we knew it had to happen, but it was very sad nonetheless. She was a brilliant dog. We had two other cockers after that as well, and I love cocker spaniels. Really nice dogs.
Yeah, they are nice. They are nice dogs. The worst one for me was putting down my mum's dog, Oscar, who's kind of a mastiff staff cross, and is a rescue dog from like seven years, and... Because I can't remember how, but with the vet, for some reason, came to our house to put him down. I'm not sure if he was too stressful for him to walk through the streets.
Yeah.
He had a brain tumour.
Oh.
And he would have been about 12. And he was in the front room, and I was lying by his face. She said, "If you just stroke his face and stroke him and tell him that you love him," vet did. And she put the needle in that put him to sleep. But it was the strangest thing, because it was the first time ever I'd seen the light go out. Like, you can see the change where I'm not saying anything as spiritual as the soul leaves the body, but life as it exists in that entity, i.e. that dog, was gone. And it was obviously deeply upsetting, because it's your dog as well. But it was also like, I watched him go.
That's a really important life lesson, really, isn't it? Like, that is a hell of a step for a young man to take.
Well, I was in my 20s, so I was like, okay. I wasn't like, this wasn't, yeah, but it was
still, like, even so, that's really something, like watching something be put to sleep. I'm not sure.
Right in
do
its
it.
Face, yeah, yeah. So I don't know what, like, my mum was there. I don't know why she didn't do it. She's the responsible adult. She should have watched him in the face as he died, not me.
But, she was trying to teach you, mate. She was trying to give you a lesson.
I don't know. I don't think she was. I think she was just passing the buck. but that was really sad, and to see him go, and because he was so poorly, he was pacing around. But, you know, I don't want this to end on a really negative note. This is dogs, cats, whatever. They're amazing things. I don't understand people who don't really get pets. I don't understand pets. To look in like Frankie's... Whenever I'm recording, I'm looked down and my feet are on Frankie, so he just sits beneath my feet when I'm recording. Which I'm recording every day, pretty much, and you know, just having a companion like him. And it's just, you can't replace it. I wouldn't want to replace it.
Oh, I hate that timer at times like these.